Great, it's good to see you all again and to be able to continue this series in 1 Peter as well. If you remember, we were looking at the preceding passages back in, I think it was May or June, a while ago anyway, and here we're getting on into chapter 3. Peter's point in his letter is that if you are a Christian today, then you are living in a world that rejects Jesus. That's how it is. You are living in a world that rejects Jesus. It was the case for Peter's immediate audience 2,000 years ago, who were these Christians scattered around ancient Turkey. And it's the same for us today, scattered around modern London. We're living in a world which doesn't really have room for Jesus in it, which rejects him. Peter describes his audience as being chosen exiles. They're chosen by God, but yet they're living like exiles or strangers or refugees. They don't fit in with the culture around them. Now, this could be something which is stressful, and it can be something which is frightening. And Peter is dealing here in chapter 3 with this whole topic of how do we engage with a world which rejects Jesus? How do we react when that world rejects us as well? How do we react to what that world says about us and how it treats us? How do you respond? Now, I'm told the natural response of anyone, I think it's the same case with lots of animals as well, to something which is stressful or frightening, is it's either fight or flight. You either fight back, or you pick up your heels and you run away. There's this sort of natural body thing which kicks in, you know, the adrenaline starts going, and you start getting heated up, you start getting ready to do something, either to fight back to what you see as being a stressful or a frightening situation, or to run away and get as far away from it as soon as possible. Remember when my wife and I were first married, we went on a honeymoon, we went to Canada in the Rocky Mountains. It was beautiful, it was April, everything was completely frozen, it was like -4 degrees every day, but it was lovely. And I remember getting ready to go there and looking at what do you need to be aware of if you go to the Rocky Mountains in Canada. And the one thing that sort of worried us a bit was the bears. You have to be prepared for the bears if you go to the Rocky Mountains. And it worried us a bit. It completely terrified my prospective mother-in-law that one or the other of us was going to be eaten before, you know, we'd had to, like, 2 weeks of marriage. How do you respond to a bear? Well, apparently either you run away or you try to fight back. We spent an inordinate amount of time researching the options of what to do if we met a bear. If you fight back, your option is something called bear spray, and you spray it in the bear's direction, and if it's the right sort of bear and it's in the right mood and it's the right time of year, the bear might run away from you. If you run away, then your option is you run. If you run, the bear can run faster than you. If you climb, it can climb faster than you. If you swim, it can swim faster than you. So your only option if you run is to take someone with you slower, and then the bear gets them. And so I was probably going to be okay. I'm not a runner, but I'm faster than Lucy. Do you fight or do you flee? Peter says here, in this situation, you're elect exiles, you're in a world which rejects Jesus. What do? He says you do the complete opposite. You go completely against your natural instincts, and instead of fighting, you set out to be gentle. And instead of running away, you set out to be fearless. And here he's showing how this works through marriage, how this works through a relationship with a man and a woman in marriage. What this is going to look like specifically for them. A, because this is where there's going to be real challenges in that, and also where he says this is going to be shown particularly well, because he's then going to go and apply the same principles he goes on to the rest of us. So you've got 3 points on your sheet, if you've got your sheet there. Follow along on that might help a bit. The first thing, and the main point of what he's saying here, to wives first of all, and then to husbands, is live differently. Live differently. And particularly live differently in regards to your marriage. That needs to stand out as something which is distinct, something which is different, which doesn't follow the way that the rest of the world around you that's rejecting Jesus does it. Let's look at closely what he says here in, first of all, to wives in verses 1 to 5, and then husbands in verse 7. So wives, he says, first of all, sum it up, be subject to your own husbands. Be subject to your own husbands. Now, the important thing is that what Peter's saying here is he's telling us how wives here, and then going on to husbands, are going to stand out as different in the culture they live in. Some people get this idea that Peter's trying to perpetuate some kind of cultural norm of his time, and he's going, husbands, you're meant to be keeping your wives in order, let's just make sure that doesn't get disturbed. Peter's intentionally here in this whole section, all the way through the book, he's describing not how you fit in with the culture around you, but how you stand out as different. His whole point of what he's saying here is, going back to chapter 2 and verse 12, you keep your conduct good so that they may see your good deeds, he says, and glorify God on the day of visitation. They see there's something different about how you live as a Christian. And what Peter is describing here is not a sort of perpetuation of male chauvinism, but he's describing a culture which is going to be fearlessly distinct from any culture of any time, because it's a culture where individuals are focused not on themselves, but on others. You notice what Peter doesn't say. He doesn't say, husbands, make sure you beat your wives into submission and make sure they always obey you and they never step out of line. He doesn't say, as our culture might say, your wives, assert your independence and stand up for your individuality. He says, wives, do what's good for your husband. Wives, submit to your husband. Instead of, what do I want? How can I get what I want out of this relationship? He says, set out to be subject to your husband. Now, this is assuming there's an organisational structure in marriage. We haven't got time to go into that in detail. But the organisational structure that Peter has here is that the wives submit to their husbands. And conversely, we'll come to see, the husbands set out to honour their wives. It's an organisation in a marriage where each one is focused on what they do for the other, not what they get out of it for themselves. Now, this is a radical thing that Peter's teaching here, because we are all naturally self-focused, aren't we? The world revolves around me, that's how it just works. I see things through my eyes, I see things how they impact me, and my natural response to anything what's this doing to me? But here he's turning all that around. He's saying, wives, you set out to be subject to your husbands, and husbands, you set out to put your wives first in return. We'll come on to that in a moment. But his focus here, mostly in this passage, as you'll see, is on wives. And this is because he wants to use this as a great example of what it looks like to respond to a world which is against Jesus. What it looks like to stand out in a world that's against Jesus. And he's using wives here as the supreme example of what that looks like before he applies it to the rest of us. What does he say this is going to look like? Well, he says it's going to impact how you act. Verse 2, your respectful and pure conduct. All the way through Peter's letter so far, he's emphasised again and again, conduct, how you live your life in a world which is anti-Jesus. Being holy, he says, in all your conduct, because he is holy. And he keeps repeating this all the way through this letter. This is very much Peter's letter about how you live in a world that's against Jesus. And he says, wives, how you live as you submit voluntarily to your husbands is going to show your respectful and pure conduct, how your conduct is holy as God's is holy. And he says, as you do this, this is going to have an impact on the people around you who are not submitting to Christ's kingdom. And he says, first of all, this may have an impact on it. It may be that your husband is not submitting to Christ's kingdom, and it's first of all going to impact him. This is going to be the case in, as Peter writes to these people here. They've been brought face to face with Jesus as the gospel has been brought to them in ancient Turkey. Some people have submitted to him, believed him, and obeyed him, and some haven't. And it's the same today as well. Sometimes the wife does and the husband doesn't, sometimes vice versa. And he says, even if some do not obey the word, in verse 1, even if some of your husbands do not obey the word, he says they may be won without a word by the conduct of their wives when they see your respectful and pure conduct. This is Peter's principle. He's saying, the point is not that they may work out the gospel from your actions, they need to know what it is you believe, but the point is that what is it that's going to persuade them that here is something which is worth believing? Here is something which is true. Here is something which is different. How's that going to start working in this even closest relationship between your husband and wife, and then between them and the rest of the world around them? He says it's going to be what you do, which is persuasive. It's going to be what you do which stands out as different. It's not going to be how many times you constantly nag them with the gospel. It's not going to be how many brilliant orators and preachers you take them to listen to. It's not going to be how many great apologists you take them to listen to. It's going to be how you live out your life in a way which is different. What's that going to look like? Peter says it's going to look very different, because it's going to begin on the inside rather than the outside. And it's going to begin not with this fight or flight, but with gentleness. With gentleness. Your respectful, pure conduct is going to be how you live among the Gentiles, as he said back in chapter 2, verse 12, keeping your conduct good. And he says to wives, this is going to begin on the inside, not the outside. You're not going to impress your husband with the difference it's made to you by how you've braided your hair. He lists in verse 3 how much jewellery you've put on, or the fancy clothing you're wearing. What's going to make you stand out as beautiful and different, he says, is going to be what comes out from inside you, what comes out from your heart. And he says it's very simply a gentle and a quiet spirit. A spirit which isn't setting out to fight, but a spirit which is setting out to be gentle. And to show that, in this case, by putting the needs of your husband first, submitting to him in that marriage. It's a difference which begins inside, but it will be seen outside, as it then leads to this respectful and pure conduct that Peter's talking about. But he says that there's two reasons why this beauty and this attractiveness is better than anything else. He says, first of all, it doesn't perish. It's not going to be something which changes over time. But most importantly, it's precious to God. Even when it's something inside you which no one else is seeing, this is something which is precious to God himself. It says in verse 4, let your adorning be the hidden person of the heart with the imperishable beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which in God's sight is very precious. That's going to be what your husband, if he doesn't obey the word, is going to see, and what which might persuade him. And in turn, that is going to be what the Gentiles around you, the people who don't know Christ, are going to see, and which is going to show them the power of what he's doing in your life. Now, husbands, he says, come on to husbands here before we go on to living fearlessly. He says to husbands, have the same attitude. If you look at verse 7, likewise, he says, husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way. He's not saying wives behave like this, husbands be all about yourself. He's saying wives, you put your husbands first. Husbands, you put your wives first. Live in an understanding way. Prioritize, if you're a husband, understanding the needs of your wife. Understand how to do what's best for her. Yeah, not how to run faster and escape the bear. Don't run faster than her. Prioritize understanding her needs, because that's your priority in this relationship. Again, not start stomping around and showing your superiority, but living in a way which is gentle and in a way which is caring. He describes it. He says the woman, the wife in a marriage, he says, is the weaker vessel. She probably can't run as fast as you physically, but at the same time, she is going to have more honour than you because of that. The idea is like a vessel, you know, it's a pot or a teacup. You've got your fine china tea set, and then you've got your big sports direct mug or whatever, you know. That's the husband. The fine china tea set is the wife. It's not as strong, but it's worth a lot more, and it's more valuable. And you're to honour it. You're to honour your wife as the weaker vessel, he says. So husbands and wives, he says, live differently, because you're not focused on what do I get out of this, what's making me happy, what's giving me a sense of how important I am. But your focus is on wives. How can I be subject to my husband? Husbands, how can I show honour, not to me, but to my wife? Fundamentally different. He's drawing here on what he's already said about submitting to authority in chapter 2. And you are set out to be subject to your boss if you're at work. You set out to honour the king. Here he's drawing both those parallels. And he's saying, wives set out to be subject to your husbands. But husbands set out to honour your wives. Second point, let's move on to this. Assuming we're living differently in this way, in a way which is gentle, in a way which isn't getting up and shouting about ourselves. Why is it so important that we live fearlessly? Live fearlessly is what Peter says, and specifically here to wives, but the same principle holds for husbands as well. And as we go on in the chapter, hopefully next week, we'll see how he applies it to the rest of us. Live fearlessly. What is going to be frightening if you live like this? He says in verse 6, Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord. Okay, it sounds fairly gentle, and you know, she's not going full of herself. And then he says, and you are her children, if you do good. Okay, we understand the doing good bit. And do not fear anything that is frightening. What's going to be frightening about this situation? Why is it frightening? One of the scariest things in life, I think, is standing out and being different, isn't it? It's standing out and being different, and not in a way which people are going to look up to. It's very easy to stand out and be different, and people look at you and go, wow, look at what a strong character that woman is or that man is. Look how they're standing up, being different, and they're making sure it's their way or the highway, and everything. You know, look what a character this person is. One of the scariest things in life is standing out, being different, and doing that in a way which shows that you're gentle, that you're vulnerable, that you're not self-important. You're not a strong and powerful character. You're someone who is gentle. Peter's saying to these wives and their husbands and the rest of us, don't be afraid to live contrary to the culture around you. There's all sorts of pressures on us, aren't there, from the world around us, and society's full of pressure at the moment. And particularly for Christians, there's a lot of pressure to fit in, to be the same, to, you know, we're not going to be thrown to the lions, but people are going to metaphorically do that, and they're perhaps going to speak against us, they're going to call us bigots, they're going to call us loonies, or whatever it is. There's a lot of pressure to fit in with the rest of society. And Peter's writing this against the backdrop of a society which is very like our own. Okay, maybe the sort of feminism and all that wasn't a thing in his day, I don't know. But it's a society which says, you know, do as you like, your life's about you. You know, enjoy yourself, you know, join in, be part of it. We'll come on to this hopefully in a future series, but just skip ahead quickly to chapter 4, verse 4. He talks about the Gentiles and their parties and their orgies, and he says, with respect to this, they're surprised that you do not join them in the same flood of debauchery, and they malign you. They set out to speak against you. They say bad things about you because you don't fit in. Verse 16, which we'll come on to next week, it should be on your sheets as well. He says, have a good conscience so that when you are slandered, those who revile your good behaviour in Christ may be put to shame. People are going to speak against the way that you live. And they're going to say, that's bad. That is demeaning to women. That is demeaning to men. That's a bad way to have a relationship, is what they're going to say about what they see of a Christian marriage. How are people in your office going to react if they see you actively, as a wife, submitting to your husband? You say, oh, I can't do that, my husband wouldn't approve. Or actively honouring your wife, I can't do that, I wouldn't honour my wife. What are they going to think about you? How are they going to react to that? Maybe they'll think it's cute the first time, once it starts interfering with your ability to join in with this or to work long hours at that. It's going to impact how they speak about you as well. Peter says here that the bravest actions of God's elect exiles, they're not carried out necessarily by the people who are thrown to the lions or the people who are missionaries in some foreign place where the jungle's full of mosquitoes. But he says it's the bravest actions of God's elect exiles are carried out by wives specifically, couples as well, in ordinary life, at the workplace, at home, with their family, down the street, as they gently and patiently live changed and submissive as a wife, honouring as a husband, lives. Do not be afraid, he says, of anything that is frightening as you live as elect exiles. And Peter's going to go on to apply the same principle to how you defend the faith. You know, how do you respond to people who say, why do you believe that? Again, you do it gently and fearlessly. And we'll see more of that next week. But right now, his focus is on wives, as are husbands as well, but particularly on wives. And he wants husbands to honor their wives, particularly as they are taking on fearlessly and gently a hostile world that hates Christ. Which brings us on to the third thing, which is that the reason Peter gives us for all of this. He says, live hopefully, because you and your wife have bigger fish to fry. You and your wife have a hope which really matters. Peter's whole letter is framed around this hope that he says is set before Jesus' people. Right back in chapter 1 and verse 3, according to God's great mercy, he's caused us to be born again to a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, to an inheritance that is imperishable, undefiled and unfading, kept in heaven for you. Peter says to husbands and to wives in verse 7, he says, show honour to the woman as the weaker vessel, since they are heirs with you of the grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered. What is it you're hoping for? The women that Peter's giving us an example of here, Sarah, for example, he says, these are the holy women who hoped in God. They have the same hope that you do. What is it you're hoping for? There's two reasons, Peter says, for living a fearlessly gentle life together. As a wife and a husband. First, a reason about who you are and what's going on. And secondly, a reason which is a warning about what not to be doing. And the reason for doing this, the positive reason, he says they are heirs with you of the grace of life. Heirs of the grace of life. A Christian couple are exiles together in a hostile world, but they're also heirs together. They're heirs together of God's grace, the grace of God's the eternal life that Jesus gives. And so he describes them as being heirs together. It's not that, you know, the way that things worked in ancient Israel, you know, that the boys inherited and then the wives married into the family and then they'd share the inheritance. In Jesus' kingdom, the wives and the husbands equally inherit and they're equally heirs. I'm not an heir because I'm married to a Christian, she's not an heir because she's married to me, but we're equally heirs because of God's grace to us. There's great equality in what God has done with us. So that's a great reason for me to honour my wife and my wife to submit to me because we're modelling gentleness and love in that marriage. You're heirs together, and the inheritance you look forward to is yours equally. And you're heirs of God's grace and of the life he's given to you. This is taking us back to chapter 1, verse 13. You should see that on your sheet. He says, set your hope fully on the grace that will be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. That's where all your hope should be set. And that means you can afford to live differently, even in the face of opposition in the world around you, because you know where your hope is. The second reason here is also very important. It's a bit of a warning from Peter. He says, do this so that your prayers may not be hindered. He's saying, as you both set your hope on the inheritance that you have, as you look forward to that together, your most important relationship is your relationship to God and your dependence upon him. You pray to God because he's your king. You're bringing your request to him because you depend on him. And that's the most important relationship you have. He says, what's going to get in the way of that? What's going to get in the way of that relationship? Well, what's going to get in the way of it as we stop living as part of his kingdom and try to fit in with the world? When we try to fit in with the world around us and we say, this is too difficult. I'm not going to honour my wife. I'm not going to submit to my husband. People around me are going to laugh. I'm going to do things the way that everyone else does it. That, he says, is what's going to hinder your prayers. That's going to get in the way of your relationship to God. And spoilers, just reading ahead to verse 12, this is what he's referring to. This is a quote from Psalm 34. It says, the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ears are open to their prayer, but the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. It says, there's a fundamental split down the middle of this world between those who belong to Christ, those who are made righteous in him, and those who do evil, who do things their own way. Which side do you want to align yourself with? The eyes of the Lord are on the righteous. He listens to their prayer, but his face is against those who do evil. The warning is important for all of us because the warning is this, that living distinctly isn't something which is optional. It's not a sort of extra tag on if you want to be a sort of super Christian that's set out to live distinctly. It's part of what living as Jesus' people in this world looks like. And so this isn't just a lesson on, you know, how a great marriage could work or what Peter thinks a great marriage is like. It's what you and I need to work on today if we're wives or husbands. It's what we need to help others to work on if they're wives and husbands. Yeah, what am I going to change to better honour my wife? What are you going to change to better submit to your husband? How are you going to distinctly and fearlessly and gently live out your lives in this world together? And this is critical because this is going to show, as we'll see next week, where your hope is. And that is going to be why people ask you, what's the reason for this hope? That's going to be how this world is impacted for God's glory. Chapter 2, verse 12, Peter says, live distinct lives, live good lives among the Gentiles so that they may glorify God. That's what we're aiming for at the end of the day. If you're not a Christian here today, if you're looking into this and you think this is really weird, you're right, it is really weird. That's the point Peter's making. It is different. It is fundamentally different from how anyone else lives their lives and needs to be. If you're wondering, why do Christians do this? You know, talk to them, ask them. Ask a Christian, why do you think this is important? Why do you want to live like this? And see what they say. Let me pray as we finish. Father, we pray that you help us to live lives which are gentle and which are at the same time fearless, where we can be distinct and yet where we can be not afraid because we have a hope in Jesus which outlasts anything we see around us. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. Yeah, it's a good question. So what if you're not a husband or a wife? Peter is specifically addressing wives and husbands, isn't he? I think the principle is exactly the same, that we're living distinctly in a way which is gentle and fearless. And this is slightly the downside of taking it a bit at a time, right? If we were getting this letter from Peter, we'd read the whole thing. We'll see more next week about what it means for the rest of us. But he will apply exactly the same principles to how anyone, you know, single or married or whatever, lives it, you know, in the workplace and with their friends, etc. So how do you square this with modern feminist movements and everything? So I said at the beginning, this is Peter's point is partly that it should look very different to the world around us. So people are going to look at this and they're going to say, "Oh, that is strange how those Christians are living." Now, you know, he's not preaching male chauvinism here. He's not saying, you know, husbands beat your wives into submission. What he's saying is, women, set out. You know, you've got freedom to choose to live how you like. Set out to use that freedom to submit to your husband. Yeah, that's what you're going to do. And so you're going to be focused on him. And he says, at the same time, your husbands, you've got freedom to, you know, how are you going to choose to live? You set out, focus to honour your wife. So he's saying on both sides, you've got a responsibility to focus on living for the other person. And that's what's radically different, you know, in Peter's own culture. You know, he's not trying to perpetuate how people lived in those days. He's setting out something which is completely different. But it's also completely different to our culture. And, modern feminism wouldn't be pleased with it. Ancient male chauvinism wouldn't be pleased with it either. So he's setting out something which is fundamentally distinct. Does that make sense? Yes. And he's saying in at the end, isn't he? He's speaking very much about the equality there is in marriage, your heirs together, what's really important. But at the same time, there's these different roles. Live out that role, focus on the other person, which is going to be what really shines out as being different. And there's just as much responsibility for men to do that towards women, to honour them, as there is for women to do that towards their husbands and submit to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess people can mishear also what the Bible teaches about men and women and in marriage, and think that it's saying that women, all women, need to submit to all men in everything, and that's not what the Bible teaches. It's specifically in the marriage relationship.
He says specifically, be subject to your own husbands, okay? No one else's husband. Yeah, that's a good point. Should anyone feel in charge or should it be balanced? So there is structure, right? There's structure here, which is a good thing. You know, we have structure in our organisations. Any sort of organisation has to have some kind of structure. Someone who's going to carry the can at the end of the day. But at the same time, there's a complete equality. And he's setting up this, it's very interesting structure, isn't he? Because he's saying, your husbands, set out to honour your wives. You know, same as you would honour a king. Set out to honour your wife. Wives, set out to submit to your husbands, the same as you'd submit to a boss. Both in different ways, are then focused, not on me, but on the other.
That's there, still there.
Yeah.
Women should submit to their...
Yes. Yeah, and that's really important. He's saying, wives, submit to your husbands. So he's saying there is structure, and he's saying there is someone who's accountable. Your husband's accountable for the decisions made in that family. But you know, it's not his job to beat his wife into submission. You know, you as your wife, submit to your husband. You know, give him that role, make it easy for him. There's two ways to this, right? The wife is there for the husband, the husband is there for the wife. None of them are there for themselves. And that's the point that Peter's making. It's something which is very not me focused. You know, I'm not there for what I get out of it. I'm there for what my wife gets out of it. And she's not there for what she gets out of it. She's there for what I get out of it. And that's what's going to happen. So he'd be responsible for making the decisions, right? And the wife's responsible for submitting to him. But no, it's a word for non-Christians. It's the opposite. So in the context he's using it here, it means people who are not God's people. So originally it was that you had the Jews, and then you had the Gentiles who weren't Jews. Yeah. But here, the way he's using it is he's talking about the people he's writing to are God's people, and then the Gentiles are the people who are not God's people. So that's how the distinction.